So, imagine it is 10 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah, your office is buzzing, right?
Cool.
Emails are flying, transactions are clearing. And then, just in the space of a single heartbeat, every screen goes black.
Oh, that is a nightmare scenario right there.
Totally. The servers are dead. The network is totally unresponsive. And the silence in the room is just deafening. In that exact moment, the difference between, a minor operational hiccup and a business-ending catastrophe really comes down to one fundamental question.
Which is, did you plan for a disruption or did you plan for a full-scale resurrection?
Exactly.
Because the cold reality is that most organizations really only plan for the former. They think they are safe just because they have a copy of their files tucked away somewhere, you know?
Right, like an external hard drive in a closet.
Yeah. They conflate data preservation with operational continuity. And when that fire alarm rings, they realize, usually way too late, that raw data without a functioning system to actually run it is, well, completely useless.
Which brings us to the mission of our deep dive today.
Yeah.
We are exploring the crucial life or death difference between just backing up your data and implementing full-scale IT disaster recovery, or DR, as the industry calls it.
It's a huge distinction.
It really is. And to decode how businesses actually prepare for catastrophic tech failures, we're looking at a highly specific, really revealing source. It's the Newport Beach IT Disaster Recovery and Business Continuity Planning Guide.
Quite a mouthful, but incredibly detailed.
Yeah, it was created by Technigian, which is a managed IT firm based out of Southern California.
And honestly, it serves as a perfect microscope for this entire topic.
It really does. Because whether you are running a business yourself, maybe you're prepping for a major tech infrastructure meeting, or you're just, intensely curious about how the digital world stays afloat when things go terribly wrong, this deep dive is going to fundamentally change how you view digital security.
Absolutely, it reframes everything.
Especially because we're talking about Newport Beach, right? It's this affluent hub filled with financial firms along the Pacific Coast Highway, managing like $500 million in client assets.
Massive stakes.
Yeah, and you've got these high-end concierge medical practices over at Fashion Island. These kinds of operations, they have strictly zero tolerance for downtime.
Right, because in that specific geographic and economic environment, the cost of downtime, it isn't just measured in lost productivity.
No, it's way worse than that.
Yeah, it's measured in massive reputational damage, heavy regulatory fines, and immediate, irreversible financial hemorrhage. I mean, clients will walk.
Definitely. So to really wrap our heads around this, I want to use an analogy that I think perfectly separates the two concepts at play here.
Okay, let's hear it.
So the guide draws a really heavy line between backup and disaster recovery. Here is the easiest way to think about it. Backup is like keeping a photo album of your house in a fireproof safe.
Nice to have, for sure.
Right. But disaster recovery is having a fully furnished second house ready to move into the exact moment the first one burns down.
Oh, I love that. That captures the mechanical difference perfectly. I mean, backup preserves the past, right? But disaster recovery ensures the future.
Yes.
When a catastrophe hits, whether that's, a power surge destroying your local server rack or a localized event that displaces your entire staff, having that metaphorical photo album of your data does not magically reconstruct the network infrastructure.
Or the software.
Exactly. The application environments, security protocols, everything required to actually open and use those files. Disaster recovery is this heavily engineered process of restoring the entire IT operation within a strictly defined time frame.
And when we talk about what triggers that recovery process, we really have to look at the physical reality of our technology.
Which people always forget.
They do. We tend to think of our tech as just purely digital, floating up in the cloud somewhere.
Yeah.
But data lives on physical hard drives, in physical buildings, subject to physical environments.
It's all incredibly tangible at the end of the day.
And the Newport Beach setting highlights some fascinating, really specific geographic threats. The guide lists the obvious suspects, right? Like Santa Ana wind events that spark wildfires.
Forcing those massive regional evacuations.
Exactly. Or coastal storm surges threatening the power grids along the peninsula. But there was this one detail buried in the environmental risk section that honestly stopped me in my tracks.
Let me guess. The marine layer.
Yes. The marine layer. Okay, let's unpack this. Because the idea that a gentle, salty beach breeze is a tier one IT threat sounds completely wild to me. I mean, how does the weather report literally destroy a server?
Well, what's fascinating here is the microscopic chemistry of it all.
Chemistry.
Yeah, if an on-premise server room in a coastal facility lacks rigorous, specialized climate control, that marine layer infiltrates the environment. You have these tiny airborne salt particles combining with high humidity.
Okay, sounds sticky.
Very. And when that salty moisture settles on the microscopic copper traces of a motherboard, it creates a perfect electrolyte solution.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it induces galvanic corrosion. The salt air literally eats the conductive pathways on the circuit boards until the electrical connections fail entirely.
That is insane.
The server basically rots from the inside out.
That is genuinely terrifying. So it's not just like a hacker in a hoodie. It's literally the humidity.
The weather is out to get your data.
And it gets worse, too, because these physical vulnerabilities intersect directly with a highly rigid legal environment. Like, if your server rusts out or your building gets evacuated because of a fire, the government does not give you a pass.
Oh, absolutely not. The legal and regulatory frameworks are entirely unsympathetic to your operational tragedies.
They do not care.
Not at all. If you are, say, a financial wealth management firm in Newport Beach, you are governed by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA, and the SEC.
Right.
They don't just suggest business continuity as a nice idea. They demand documented, tested capabilities to protect investors.
And if you're a healthcare practice, you've got HIPAA knocking on your door, mandating strict emergency mode operations to protect patient data.
Yep.
Plus, anyone doing business in California is subject to the California Privacy Rights Act.
Right.
The CPRA.
And the CPRA is particularly ruthless regarding breach notification timelines. It assumes your incident response capability is fully operational, even if your primary facility is currently, well, a smoking crater.
Wow.
The regulatory clock starts ticking immediately. You cannot look at an auditor and say, we missed the notification deadline because our servers were corroded by sea salt.
Yeah, the beach breeze ate my homework is not going to fly.
Exactly.
So we have this perfect, terrifying storm here. Uniquely destructive physical threats, relentless cyber threats, and these zero forgiveness regulatory frameworks.
Yeah.
The big question is, how does a business actually engineer a lifeboat to survive all of this?
It takes a lot of planning.
Right. And the guide breaks down the core architecture of a recovery plan. And it starts with a really brutal mathematical reality check. Before you buy a single piece of hardware, you have to define your metrics.
You have to. You cannot build a solution without defining the acceptable parameters of failure. You need to know exactly how much pain the business can endure before it simply ceases to exist.
And to measure that pain, the guide introduces two magic numbers, RTO and RPO.
The holy grail of disaster recovery.
So let's start with recovery time objective, or RTO.
Yeah.
If I am understanding this correctly, this is essentially a measure of a clock ticking forward from the exact moment of the disaster.
That's right.
It's the maximum acceptable downtime before the business is fundamentally crippled.
That is the exact mechanism, yeah. For the highly demanding professional services world in Newport Beach, the guide suggests a realistic RTO target of 4 to 8 hours for critical systems.
Okay, so a pretty tight window.
It's very tight. If the network goes black at 8 a.m., the business absolutely must be fully operational by noon or 4 p.m. at the absolute latest. Okay. Anything beyond that, and client trust just evaporates, trades are missed, and the financial bleeding becomes fatal.
That makes sense. And then you have the second metric, recovery point objective, or RPO. If RTO is the clock ticking forward, RPO is basically looking backward in time, right?
Yes, exactly.
It measures the maximum acceptable data loss.
Okay.
And the guide suggests an RPO of 1 to 4 hours.
Meaning you are actively deciding during peacetime how much historical data you are willing to permanently sacrifice.
I have to say, just thinking about an RPO of 4 hours induces a mild panic attack.
It's a lot of lost work.
It is. That means you are essentially accepting that your business is going to have total amnesia for the last 4 hours of activity prior to the crash.
Yep.
Like, imagine you were running one of those bustling concierge medical practices. The system crashes at 2 p.m. If your RPO was 4 hours, every single patient intake, every updated chart, every single prescription written since 10 a.m. is just gone.
Wait,
vanished.
Just wiped out.
And the waiting room is full, and you have zero digital records of what just happened for the last half of the day.
The sheer anxiety of that scenario is exactly why establishing these numbers is the critical first step. Those metrics ruthlessly dictate the technology you must purchase.
How so?
Well, if a wealth management firm declares they need a 4-hour RTO, but they only rely on, like, local tape backups stored in a supply closet, It is mathematically impossible for them to achieve their goal.
Right.
The numbers force the architecture.
But let's put ourselves right in the middle of the disaster for a second.
Yeah.
The servers go down, the CEO is screaming, the doctors are panicked. Human nature dictates that everyone wants everything restored instantly, right?
No, of course. Everything is an emergency to the person who needs it.
Exactly. So how does an IT team avoid the paralysis of trying to save every single file and application at the exact same time?
By acknowledging the hard truth of system architecture, recovery resources are heavily finite. Network bandwidth, compute power, and human attention all have limits. If you attempt to push the entire organization's data through the recovery pipeline simultaneously, the system just bottlenecks.
Like a traffic jam.
Exactly like a traffic jam. You end up recovering nothing quickly, so you have to perform ruthless digital triage.
The guide calls this system classification. It's basically pre-deciding who gets on the lifeboat first.
That's a great way to put it. And categorizes operations into three strict tiers. Tier one is critical.
The most important stuff.
Right. These are the lifeblood systems, client-facing portals, email, financial trading platforms, electronic health records. These must hit that aggressive RTO window.
Okay, so that's tier one. What's tier two?
Tier two is important, but not urgent. Think internal collaboration tools or like secondary reporting databases. Those can wait up to 24 hours to come back online.
And tier three?
Tier three is non-critical. Your legacy data archives, long-term storage, those might take 72 hours or more. By defining this hierarchy legally and operationally beforehand, the IT team can just ignore the screaming CEO and execute the playbook.
That takes the emotion out of it entirely, which flows seamlessly into the technology itself, because knowing when you need a specific system back online dictates what kind of infrastructure you have to build to actually support it.
Form follows function.
Exactly. And the guide details three specific models of recovery infrastructure, ranging from super basic to incredibly advanced.
And those models escalate dramatically in both recovery speed and financial cost.
Right. So the baseline is what they call cold standby. And this sounds like the absolute bare minimum effort.
It really is.
Like your data's backed up offsite somewhere, sure, but you have no actual hardware waiting.
Yeah.
If your servers die, you literally have to source and purchase new physical servers, wait for shipping, manually install the operating systems from scratch, and then begin the agonizing process of downloading your data over the internet.
Yeah, it's cheap, but it could take days or even weeks. Cold standby is essentially a gamble that you won't get hit. It's really only viable for those low-priority Tier 3 archival systems we talked about.
Okay, so a step up from that is warm standby.
Right. In this model, you have a secondary environment partially configured. The hardware is there, the operating systems are installed, and data is being replicated periodically.
Okay, that sounds better.
It is, but when disaster strikes, a technician still has to manually activate the systems, apply the latest data patches, and route the network traffic. It takes a few hours, making it acceptable for Tier 2.
Got it. But for those Tier 1 systems, the concierge medical records, the $500 million financial trades, the guide points to the gold standard, hot standby.
Also called active infrastructure.
Right. Active. And the way they describe this is just wild. It's a fully synchronized duplicate digital environment running continuously in the background. As a user saves a file in Newport Beach, that exact file is instantaneously written to a mirror server completely offsite.
Near instant synchronization.
Yeah. And failover isn't measured in hours. It's just an automatic network reroute measured in minutes or even seconds.
It provides nearly seamless operational continuity. You barely even notice the blip.
But I have to push back here a bit. Mechanically, hot standby sounds incredibly prohibitively expensive.
It sounds like it, yeah.
I mean, it literally sounds like paying full retail price for two luxury cars, parking one in a garage miles away, and keeping the engine running 24/7. Just in case your primary car gets a flat tire. Are small to mid-sized businesses in Newport Beach really paying to lease and maintain duplicate physical data centers?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the answer historically was no. You're right. It was an enterprise-only luxury. Only massive corporations could afford the real estate, the secondary hardware, and those redundant power bills.
Because it's literally doubling your IT budget.
Exactly. But this is where the cloud revolution completely changed the entire paradigm. Platforms like Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, and Google Cloud, they have completely democratized active infrastructure.
By removing the physical real estate requirement.
Precisely. You no longer have to build a secondary physical building. You can lease fractional, highly elastic virtual space in a massive cloud data center located in, say, Nevada or Oregon.
Oh, I see.
During peacetime, you are only paying a tiny fraction of the cost just to keep the data synchronized. You only pay for the massive compute power when a disaster actually hits, and the cloud environment scales up automatically to take the load. Hot standby is now economically viable for almost any critical business.
Okay, so a business has the perfect mathematical metrics. They've classified their tiers, and they've invested in a beautifully elastic AWS hot standby environment. But technology is ultimately useless without humans who actually know how to deploy it under extreme psychological pressure.
Which brings us to the operational reality of disaster recovery, documented procedures, and aggressive testing.
Right.
The guide outlines specific modern catastrophe scenarios where the best hardware in the world will absolutely fail if the human runbooks aren't flawless.
And the most devastating scenario they highlight for 2026 is ransomware. A malicious actor locks your systems and demands payment.
Ransomware fundamentally changes disaster recovery because it's not just an outage, it's an act of contamination. You cannot simply press a button and restore your backups.
Wait, why not? If I have a backup from yesterday, why can't I just load it up and ignore the hackers?
Because the hackers often infiltrate the network weeks before they pull the trigger, seeking out your backups to corrupt them first.
Oh, that is so sneaky.
To survive, you must utilize what's known as immutable backups. This relies on worm technology. Write once, read many. At the foundational storage level, the hardware physically rejects any command to alter, encrypt, or delete the data for a predetermined time frame.
Oh, wow.
The ransomware code literally bounces off it.
That is brilliant. It's like a mathematical lockbox.
It is. However, having clean data is only half the battle. If your production environment is infected and you restore your pristine, immutable backup data back onto those infected servers.
Let me guess, the malware just encrypts it all over again.
Instantly. You are trapped in a loop of doom. Your disaster recovery plan must include the automated provisioning of a completely new, forensically clean environment, a clean room to restore the data into.
Wow. Okay, here's where it gets really interesting to me. We spend all this time talking about sophisticated cyber attacks and cloud failovers. But the guide also tackles the threat of the cloud itself failing.
Ah, yes.
What happens when your software as a service goes down? Like, if Microsoft 365 or Salesforce experiences a global outage, all your brilliant local planning is totally moot.
This raises an important question about the modern business ecosystem. Single points of failure. When a SaaS provider goes dark, a business cannot simply shrug its shoulders and tell its clients, "Sorry, Microsoft is down." You are still responsible for your operations.
And that leads to this shockingly low-tech requirement highlighted in the guide. When discussing healthcare practices and HIPAA compliance, it points out that HIPAA mandates documented emergency mode operations, which legally requires having paper-based fallback procedures.
The old reliable.
It is this incredible irony. You could have a high-tech, multi-million dollar concierge medical practice in Fashion Island boasting the absolute best cloud infrastructure money can buy. And they are legally required by federal law to have stacks of pre-printed paper patient forms sitting in a physical supply closet, just in case the digital world evaporates.
It really highlights the ultimate fail-safe. And the regulatory auditors, whether it is the Office for Civil Rights enforcing HIPAA or FINRA auditing a wealth manager, they know that complex technology fails.
Right.
That is exactly why they do not accept theoretical plans sitting in a three-ring binder. They demand forensic evidence of testing.
Yeah, the guide specifically mandates annual full failover tests and semi-annual tabletop exercises, where the team essentially plays out a disaster scenario like a board game.
Because a disaster recovery plan is nothing more than a hypothesis until you prove it works.
Definitely.
If an IT team runs an annual failover test and the system completely crashes, that is not a failure. That is a massive victory.
Really? How so?
Because it means you discovered a fatal flaw during peacetime, when you actually have the luxury of fixing it. If you wait until a ransomware gang has encrypted your network to discover your immutable backups were misconfigured, that is an existential threat to the company.
So what does this all mean? If we synthesize all of these complex layers we've talked about, the core takeaway from this guide is that true disaster recovery cannot be bought in a box.
No, definitely not.
It is a meticulously orchestrated ecosystem. It requires establishing brutally realistic metrics with RTO and RPO. It demands strategic infrastructure investments, like hot standby cloud environments, to bypass physical hardware limitations.
Yep.
And it relies on rigorous, almost militant human testing. All of this must be custom tailored to the unique geographic threats, like the corrosive coastal air of Newport Beach and strict industry regulations.
It requires an absolute shift in organizational mindset. A business must operate under the assumption that a catastrophic failure is inevitable and build its daily operations around surviving that inevitability rather than just crossing their fingers and hoping a local backup drive is enough.
And we absolutely have to credit TechniGN for providing the blueprint for this conversation today. The guide notes that their managed IT team actually engineers these exact rigorous DR programs for businesses throughout Orange County.
They do the heavy lifting.
They really do. They handle the complex business impact analysis, write the technical runbooks, architect the cloud infrastructure, and orchestrate those vital annual failover tests to keep the auditors happy. For any business leaders listening who realize they might just have a safe full of photo albums instead of a second house, the guide mentions TechniGN offers free DR readiness assessments. You can reach their team at 949-379-8500 or by checking out technign.com/managed-services.
And I strongly encourage you, the listener, to audit your own operations or even your personal digital life.
Yeah, good point.
If your primary laptop, your phone, or your company's core server simply vanished into thin air today, do you know exactly what steps you would take and in what order to resume your life? Or are you relying on a pile of untested files, hoping the digital house never catches fire?
It's a sobering reality check. And I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over, building on the architecture we've explored today.
Lay it on us.
So this guide brilliantly champions the use of hot standby cloud environments to save local businesses from physical geographic disasters like a California wildfire or a coastal power grid failure.
Right.
But if we zoom out to a global scale, millions of businesses are simultaneously outsourcing their ultimate safety nets to the exact same three major cloud providers, AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud.
It's true.
What happens when a disaster is large enough or a state-sponsored cyber attack is sophisticated enough to take down the cloud itself? As we centralize our survival strategies into these massive data centers, are we collectively, blindly heading toward a day where the only true, globally reliable Tier 1 disaster recovery plan is a warehouse full of paper?
It certainly makes you wonder if the ultimate fail-safe really is just a pen and paper after all.
Maybe hold off on shredding those pre-printed forms just yet. Keep your data safe, ensure your recovery plans are actually tested, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.